Hi, everyone, and welcome to Inside Secrets of the Caribbean. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and today I am really pleased to welcome Tom Jacobs. He is the producer and creator of Secrets of the Caribbean, the actual TV show that is out there. How are you, Tom?
Well, because you're in sunny Mallorca, and I'm in cold Cleveland, and it's 18 degrees and snowing, you're probably better than I am right now.
Well, you know what? I always say that every morning you wake up is a good one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Particularly in this day and age with everything that's gone on. It's been a tough year. It's been a tough year.
It definitely has. Well, and you being in the industry where, you know, your shows that you do are all based on travel. Mm-hmm. So this must have impacted you greatly this year.
Well, I talked to some members of my team yesterday, and I reminded them that it was a year ago this past week that we got back from our last trip, and we had plans to go out about a month later, and we've been sitting since then. It's been really difficult, very, very difficult. It's tough to do a travel show when you can't travel.
True enough. Well, you know what? Before we get into Secrets of the Caribbean, tell me about you. I mean, you have an extensive history in media. You've been a producer, news, film. Give me a bit of your history.
I literally have been doing it since the film days in television news, which is the early 70s. But I tell people, interestingly enough, I'm a historian by training and a journalist by profession. So I look at most of what I do through the prism of history, which has served me quite well in giving me perspective on events, how I look at stories, how I cover stories, how I tell stories. I started out as a photographer, which was great training. Because I still keep my hand in. The first season, I probably filmed a third of the material that we used for Secrets of the Caribbean. And it's great. I still enjoy it. I like it a lot more because I'm not carrying the 50 pounds of equipment I used to carry when I was doing film.
That I can imagine. Back in the good old days.
Back in the good old days, right. But started out as a photographer, became a reporter, anchor. That was okay, but I really wanted more control over my product and gravitated toward producing and management. Became an executive producer. I've lived all over the United States and in many parts of the world. Worked for NBC. Worked in not only here in Cleveland, but in Boston, Washington, New York, LA, all the places you're supposed to go, I guess, if you do this. And really about 20 years ago, became somewhat disenchanted with what was going on in the stations, much of which has continued to today. And went out on my own so I could do different kinds of stories and tell more long-form stories and not be confined to the minute 30 that you're stuck with in television news. And did a lot of stuff for public television and some of the major independents, Discovery, Travel, that kind of thing. And in the course of that, also set up a couple newsroom operations for folks who were starting, because startups are an interesting animal and I like doing those. I swear I'm never going to do another one after I do it, but really it's the only thing that excites me anymore, because you're really molding something from scratch. Had gone out on the campaign trail in 2016 to cover that for one of the outlets. And frankly, became very disenchanted. I've covered presidential politics, the campaign, since 1972, And this was in 2016. It was the worst and most distasteful I'd ever been through. And I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm tired. And this idea had been rattling around in my head for some time because I've been fascinated by the Caribbean for years. And there's not a lot on it. I mean, you can find videos and stories about the resorts and the cruise ships and this and that and the other. I wanted to know about the people and the culture and the history because it's such a mosaic. You have so many different islands down there that are so different. You can have two different cultures on the same. I mean, you can have, if you go to St. Martin, you have French on one side and Dutch on the other. You go to Haiti in the Dominican Republic, very different places. You can have islands a mile from each other and they can be totally different. And I just found all that fascinating. And I thought there had to be a way to tell those stories. And I thought people would be interested in them because there's so many people that vacation in the Caribbean. But frankly, at least in the U.S., not a lot of them know that much about the Caribbean. They know Puerto Rico, the Bahamas, Jamaica, USVI. They do know that Cuba's down there, and they know they have hurricanes. That's what they know. Where there's so much more, and there's so many other places. So I thought it would be really interesting if we could go to some of those places and tell the stories about the people who live on those islands. And I wanted to do it in an interesting kind of way. So I found that there were still a few tall ships that were sailing with passengers between islands. And I was fortunate enough to make a deal with a company called Sail Windjammer, which sailed a ship called the SB Mandalay.
Let me stop you there for a minute, actually. What, you have a certain fascination with these tall ships.
I love
them. Where was that concept? But why, I mean, in this telling the story of the Caribbean, why did you want to implement the tall ship into that story?
Because I think that's part of the history and the culture, the sailing. Folks from Europe, the Mediterranean, and Africa sailed to the Caribbean. They didn't take a mega cruise ship with 5,000 of your closest non-friends. They sailed. And they sailed between islands, setting up communities and civilization down there. And sea and fishing and sailing is so much a part of the Caribbean. I thought it would be interesting to go from island to island using that mode of transportation. Plus, it's something that most people are not familiar with. I mean, we see tall ships in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, but that's about it. So I was fortunate enough to find this ship. It's a wonderful ship, wonderful ship. Very historic. It was built by the financier, E.F. Hutton, 100 years ago for his wife, and at the time was the largest, most expensive private sailing yacht in the world. It's got a storied history, and we've done stories on that. But it's fascinating. It's intimate, 40, 50 people, passengers.
This would be a combination of it. It's not a cruise ship, definitely, but it's not a private yacht. It's a chance where you can get together with like-minded people that want to sort of go back to their roots and really experience what the islands are about.
And you get to go to, as you go to these islands, you spend a day there, and you really, they're smaller islands like Mekwe or Meru. Meru, which is, I just love, it's 270 people there. And you interact in a way that is so very, very different than on the larger islands that have, you know, thriving communities and that kind of thing, and they're fine. But I really like the intimacy and the ability to get to understand what makes that island tick and who the people are that live there, and tell their stories. And as I tell folks, when I plan one of these trips, I do the research and plan about 50% of the stories that we're going to do. The other 50%, we just stumble across. Something comes out. One of my most interesting was, and I may have mentioned this to you when we were talking before, on the island of Bekwe. Bekwe is one of the few places where whaling is still legal. I understand there's a lot of controversy about that, but for Bekwe, it is part of the tradition and the culture, and it feeds the people. They use the meat from the whales that they catch. They don't get that. They're only allowed to hunt 4 a year, and they don't even get some every year. But it is very much a part of who they are, and it keeps them going, because there's, in many of the islands in the Caribbean, there's not much agriculture. The food is brought in, so to catch a whale and use that keeps them going. And I was, we had done a story on an artist who had old whale bone and used that for a scrimshaw carving, which was interesting. Later in the day, I was walking down the street and a man came out of a restaurant and said, "Are you the TV guy?" It's a small island and they know everybody when we're on land. And he said, "There's a guy in here you ought to meet." And I walked in and he said, "He's a retired whaler." And my eyes lit up. And I began talking to Mr. Taylor and he was just amazing. I mean, it was like something out of a movie, and he described, you know, going after the whales and this and that and the other. Now, again, some folks may be disturbed by that, and I understand, because I don't care for the hunting whales either. But I also understand reality, and in communities like this where it's part of the culture and keeping people alive, just as in the north, in Canada, Alaska, where they hunt seals, it keeps them alive.
I would actually think that part of what people don't like about it is the commercialism of it. When it comes to, you know, tribes and villages that, you know, like you said, 3 or 4 a year, that is there to sustain themselves. I think that's a bit of a different thing, because they as well use every part of that animal. And I think part of the traditions, especially I know in Canada, the Native Americans, there is an entire ceremony that goes in to, you know, they're thanking their belief system or their structure for absolutely every bit of this animal. So, and mourning the animal as well. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a difference between what you do as food and to look after yourselves, as it is to, you know, just trophy hunting.
And I think that is part of what I try to tell. And that's where my history comes in. You know, we in the modern age look at things through our prism only. There's a long history and tradition to many of these things that go on in many parts of the world. And we need to, the old phrase is, walk a mile in their shoes and understand where they are coming from and not apply our standards to what they do. It's not fair. We may not agree with it, but it's not that it's wrong. It's just that it's different. And there's nothing wrong with different. In fact, it can be very educational and enlightening if you open your mind to it. And I think that's what we're trying to do with the show, is open people's minds to the fact that there is so much more in the Caribbean than resorts and parasailing and jet skis and
beaches,
all that other stuff. Yeah.
So this show is actually available right now, and it is being aired in the U.S. and there is a possibility to go to Vimeo, I think it is.
Oh yeah, it's yeah. We make it available as a VOD, video on demand broadcast, where you can either rent it for 3 days, or you can buy individual episodes or the entire. We've done 3 seasons. Unfortunately, that's all we've done when we had to stop. I had a lot of other things scheduled, but we are waiting right now. So, and frankly, it's really unfortunate. I'm not sure how soon the sailing, cruising, yachting community is really going to be back in full force. I mean, there is some going on, but I think we are looking at midsummer or fourth quarter before folks really get back to it. And that's really sad, because it has had, you're in the Mediterranean area, and I'm sure there's been an impact there, but in the Caribbean, it has been devastating. You know, 70-80% of the economy is based upon tourism. There hasn't been a cruise ship, one of the big cruise ships, through the Caribbean, any part of it, since March. Mm-hmm. The resorts, many of them are just now starting to reopen from last March. It's put thousands of people out of work. And they don't have the diversification of economy to deal with that. And I talk to people down there all the time, and it's really desperate in many of the on many of the islands. And with the moving target of when the islands will reopen or when people can come back in a fairly easy way, because that's the other thing. If you go in now, you got to be tested before you go. You have to go into quarantine in many of these islands when you get there for 3 or 4 days. Then you have to be tested again before you can go out on the island. If you're someone who has a week's vacation and you have to spend 5 days in a hotel room, it doesn't leave you much time for a vacation.
To be honest with you, I think it's straight across the face of the planet. I mean, we look at small sort of tourism communities and islands around the world, and I think they are all feeling similar heat. Let me ask you, the next step then for Secrets of the Caribbean, are you going to continue with the islands, or are you looking at taking it to other places? The same concept, the secrets of inside the areas, in other areas around the world.
I'm looking at expanding. I'm in discussions with, I'm sad to say that unfortunately our sailing partner, because of the pandemic, had to cease operations last week, mm-hmm. just a week ago. They just can't sustain. So I have been in conversations for some time with a couple of other countries, because I still believe that the sailing concept opens up places that I couldn't normally go. So a couple of them are based in Europe, and they do sail in the Mediterranean. And one of the things that I've thought about is basically doing Secrets of the Caribbean, the beginnings. Where did the people who ended up in the Caribbean come from? Right. And many of them came from the, as I've said, Europe, England, France, Spain, Denmark, Italy. So why not visit some of those places and see where the roots are? Because again, it's the historian in me. And then come across, and there's a possibility we'll do a transatlantic crossing on a tall ship, which I think would just be amazing, you know. And then do some additional stories. So I'm looking at that. I'm looking at it. But again, we have to wait and see. We have to wait and see, because we just don't know when we're going to be able to sail again.
Well, the exciting thing about this is that you do have three seasons up, and the fact that people can live vicariously through these and perhaps plan their next vacation by looking at the various islands within the Caribbean and making their choice based on that. I think that's a wonderful thing.
Well, I think that's what's happening now, too, a lot. I mean, in terms of what I read online and in interviews I've heard of people on travel shows, they're looking for something different, something more authentic. I mean, I talk to people and say, I was in Jamaica. I said, what'd you see? Well, we were at the resort and did it. No, but what'd you see? Well, they didn't see anything. Yeah. Because they went to the resort, got behind those walls, sat on the beach, went to the restaurants, and then they came home. That's not seeing it, you know, immersing yourself in the culture.
You know, I think we're seeing that in the yachting industry as well, because, you know, straight across the board, we're seeing more and more excursion yachts. They want to go to places where nobody has ever been before. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. want to explore. And this new generation of traveler is definitely looking for a different experience. It's not my parents' generation. It is a new generation, and they're looking for a different experience, and it isn't behind those walls. It's not resorts. It's not all-inclusive. It's more travel to learn as opposed to travel to drink or to eat or it's a different experience. And I think that what you're doing is absolutely phenomenal. And I'm really happy to be part of it.
Well, we are pleased to tell our story to a larger audience. And that's why Yachting International was appealing to me when I first stumbled across your site. Yeah, this is interesting. They're doing some interesting kinds of things and dealing with some topics that appeal to me. I will also say I'm an old 60s activist, so people who look at things from a social justice standpoint appeal to me. And some of the other shows that you do are very interesting and needed.
Yes.
And I'll leave it at that without getting into the issues.
Well, that's why they're there. That's exactly why they're there. It's time for it to be spoken about. Listen, Tom, I thank you ever so much for your time. And I'm really looking forward to what's coming up on this show. We are going to be seeing, I'm actually going to be doing a little bit more hosting in the next little while. And we're going to be looking forward to meeting some of these people that preview in your films and sort of were part and parcel of making these films come to life.
We have some wonderful, wonderful people. From a 78-year-old Rastafarian drummer to a young man who decided to go in Dominica, who decided to go out and live in the jungle and see what it was like before Siddy was here. And unfortunately, when I was there, got hit by a Category 5 hurricane, and his story is fascinating. So I think we've got some good stuff for you.
I imagine. Yeah. Well, thank you again, Tom, for your time. It's really appreciated.
My pleasure. For you, only for you. Because, you know, I don't do interviews, but that's okay. I prefer to be behind the scenes, but I'm glad to do this. So.
Well, you know what? Once in a while, you have to come in front of the camera to know what those that work for you feel.
Yes. Okay. Happy to do it.
You've been watching another edition of Inside Secrets of the Caribbean. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. Please tune in again next week for another episode.